You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Joining us now is Catherine Austin Fitz. Always a pleasure to have her. Of course, her website is solari.com. Always a pleasure to have her here. Keen insights about everything. And of course, coming up, we're going to talk about hijacking Bitcoin. And Roger Ver, as we all know, people call him Bitcoin Jesus. And we look at the way that they have railroaded him. But he also wrote about hijacking Bitcoin. When I had Aaron Day on, we mentioned it a little bit, but Catherine has gone into a great depth with that. They did a review of the book, and she's now published her interview with him that you can find on
Solari.com. It's with Steve Patterson is the co-author.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah,
so the interview.
Ver's got a bit of a problem now, I guess, doing interviews with the government on his back, and I don't know if he's in prison now or not. But yeah, the co-author.
So we did an interview with Steve, and it's excellent. I mean, if you really want to understand what's going on in Bitcoin, it's absolutely excellent. And it's we made it public because this was one that the subscribers wanted to send on to their network.
Oh, that's great.
So it's public.
Great.
Just come to Solari, and you can get the book review. You can get a link to an article I wrote on why the Bitcoin reserve fraud is a scam, basically, and you can get the interview and send all of those on. So if you want to understand sort of the current baseball on Bitcoin, it's all there.
And we're going to talk a little bit about that. I want to get your take on what's going on with crypto and the new Trump administration, where this is all headed, the tokenization, the securitization that is out there. And we want to talk about that. But when I got you on, I'd just been talking about marriage and family and how that is all unraveling here in America. And you said, I'd like to say something about what I've observed with men and women in various fields that you've worked in. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I'm really glad you brought this up because I think there is nothing more important. The way control is instituted is through divide and conquer. And the most important divide and conquer is turning men and women against each other.
Yes.
You know, and then it's turning the generations against each other. And if we can turn that around, you know, we dramatically, exponentially increase our power. And I think that's part of what I was hearing you saying is your understanding of that. But I wanted to tell you sort of my background. So many years ago when I was, I went to my first few years of college and then I studied Chinese in Hong Kong for a year. And I came back as a transfer student to the University of Pennsylvania and got a job working first as a busboy, then as a waitress. And then I got promoted up to be a bartender. And it was in a French restaurant next to the University of Pennsylvania. And it was a two-person bar. And my tips and gross were so much bigger than everybody else's that the owner of the restaurant, who was a very meritocratic, I was the only woman, he decided to make me bar manager because I whatever I was doing, it made a lot more money for the house. Anyway, so the bartenders went on strike because they didn't want to work for a woman. And so they went to the owner, who was a very interesting guy, and they said, we're going to strike. And he said, it's not my problem. She's the bar manager. Go tell her it's her problem. So they came to see me, and they said, I said, why are you going to strike? They said, we don't want to work for you because we think you're going to feminize the bar. And I said, well, I am, but you're going to make a lot more money. So, you know, so anyway, long and short of it, everybody stayed except for the strike leader. And so for the next 2 months, I made the changes that I wanted to make. But one of my rules was there had to be a man and a woman. You needed it. It was a two-person bar, and you had to have a man and a woman. Anyway, but sometimes we couldn't get a man, we couldn't get a woman. It was, so sometimes we'd end up with two women, sometimes we'd end up with two men. But I kept very detailed records of how the bar performed and how the tips performed. So here's what we learned after, you know, about 6 months. If I had two women, if I had two men on the bar, the house made X, and the bartenders made 10% of that, so 0.1X, okay? Mm-hmm. If I had two women, the house made 1.5X, and the bartenders made 0.15X. So 50% better, two women than two men. If I had a man and a woman, the house made 2X, and the bartenders made 0.2X. So literally, If you were a man and I put you on with another man, you made half as much that evening as if I put you on with another woman. I mean, literally. And it was very interesting. 2 months later, I was down in the wine cellar doing the wine order, and the former deputy strike leader came down screaming at me. It was a Thursday night, which is our biggest night. How dare you put me on with another man? You're going to cut my tips in half. And I looked at him and I said, I couldn't get another one. I just couldn't get another woman. But do you see the irony in this?
Well, what is anyway, your take on what do you think was behind that? Why did that work?
Well, let me keep going. Yeah. So many years later, when I started Hamilton Securities, it was an investment bank in Washington. And one of the things we did, we thought with new technology, we could radically reduce the number of people that it took to bank and market a deal. And we literally had, we had two people running each deal. One was sort of the, so go back to the James Bond movies. One was the James Bond person who was going to do the deal. The other was the Q person who was going to build and capture all the tools, right? Mm-hmm. So you needed a tool and software and intellectual capital engineer, and then you needed a deal doer. So we always had two people who were kind of running the deal. So I kept the same records on, and we had a rule that unless we could make 10 times for the client what we could make for ourselves, you know, we didn't want to do the deal. So we felt we needed to get at least a multiple of 10. Anyway, so we track what the client made and we track what we would make. Well, it turned out to be almost the same as the bar business with a twist. You just had to, so if I had two women on the deal, the client would make 10X and we'd make X. If I had two men, the client would make 15X and we'd make 1.5X. So it was the opposite of the bar business. Men were better at transactions than client customer service, you know, in the bar. So when it came to relationships, it appeared that women were better. When it came to deals, men were better. But if I had a man and a woman, then the client made 20X and we made 2X. So it was the same thing. Now, here was the interesting thing, at both initially at the bar and certainly at the investment bank, the men always wanted to work with other men and the women always wanted to work with other women. So I had to be a dictator. It's like, no, you're going to go get a man or you'll be fired. That's how it is. You know. But here's what I saw, and it wasn't sexual so much as energetic. There is something, you know, men and women are very different. And I don't know if you remember that Mel Gibson movie where he says, yeah, women have 5% more water. But, you know, whatever the difference is, if you're going to deal in a human situation and in a, you know, a big business situation with lots going on, you know, the men and a man and a woman team are going to know more, see more, understand more. They're going to see things that the woman, you know, the man's going to see things the woman won't see. The woman's going to see things. And what you realize in a family, you know, after going through those two experiences, I realized, you know, if trying to have a family with two men or a family with two women, it's just not the same. Mm-hmm. There is a wholeness in terms of seeing the world, understanding the world, managing risk, understanding. You know, a lot of times in my experience as an investment advisor, the women understood the living equity issues and the men understood the financial equity issues. And you needed both, you know, to integrate and do both. They would. And the other thing I discovered, I saw it with financial fraud because I had so many jobs sort of cleaning couples up who'd been hurt by financial fraud or healthcare fraud. What I discovered is I can trick a man or I can trick a woman, but it is almost impossible to trick a man and woman working together. I used to have so many women who would tell me, look, my husband does the finances. I don't want to be involved. I don't like it. And I would say, no, you have to be involved. You have to be involved because the family has to integrate the financial equity issues with the living equity issues. But the other thing is he's going to get tricked.
Yeah,
you know, he's going to get tricked and it's going to be your fault. So you get involved because you need both.
That's right.
I you know, at the end of the day, I can't explain it. What I will tell you is there's a magic.
Yeah,
there's a magic to it that is really divine.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's a lot of people call it complementarianism. Right. The fact that men and women complement each other and they're in complementary roles and we complete each other and we have different perspectives and we perceive right. things very differently, which is what you saw with all of
right.
that.
Right. But it is real easy to, you know, to back up and say, oh, it's too much work to work with a guy. I'm just going to get another woman. It'll be so easy. And, mm-hmm. you know, there'll be a lot less controversy.
Yeah. That's a really fascinating insight. That's amazing. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit. Where would you like to go next? I mean, I would like to talk about the Bitcoin stuff. Is there anything else?
Yeah, so let's talk about the Bitcoin stuff because I've had an interesting history. I worked very hard in 2017. I did a very serious due diligence as an investment advisor. My clients kept asking me about Bitcoin, and I said, okay. And I called up a very dear friend of mine who has a PhD from MIT and used to run research at one of the big Silicon Valley companies. And he's the smartest guy I know. And I said, I need your help. I need to do a serious due diligence on this, and I need somebody with a strong technology background. So we spent like 100 hours working on this. He did 100 hours because we did a lot of research separate, and then we come together. And finally, I really felt like I understood, but I took all my final questions, and I flew to Baltimore and had a three-hour lunch with Bill Binney and just grilled him on all my questions. And I came away feeling I had a very good understanding of Bitcoin. And anyway, but since then, every time I talk to somebody who's a Bitcoin enthusiast, they say, you don't understand Bitcoin. And I say, well, what aspect is it you think I don't understand? Is it I don't understand the exchanges and how they work? I don't understand the custodian issues. I don't understand the technology. I don't understand, you know, how the market works. I don't understand the what specifically is it you think I don't understand? And what I discover is I don't understand the religious faith that comes with me.
You're a Bitcoin denier. You're a denier.
No, right? it's like a religion, and I don't get the religion. And you're right, I don't get the religion. Anyway, so this has gone on for years with people telling me I don't get Bitcoin, but they won't be specific about what that means or what I might read or study that would educate me some more. Anyway, but one of our subscribers posted on Solari a couple months ago, you've got to read this new book, Hijacking Bitcoin by Roger Ver and Steve Patterson. And so our subscribers usually have very good intelligence and very good recommendations. So I immediately got the book, read it, you know, and I cannot say enough good things about this book. It is so beautifully written. It is so clear and coherent. It's very rare to read a book I found on Bitcoin or crypto that's really coherent and accessible to a financial professional who's not a technologist. Anyway.
Yes, so let me interject here and say, you know, it's interesting because you're talking about Roger Ver, and they call him Bitcoin Jesus because he was an evangelist for it. I mean, we're talking about the religious aspect of it and everything. So, you know, where is he now? Has he lost his faith or has it been strengthened in all of this stuff?
So here's and I have to tell you, I'm very impressed with Roger and his work and Steve and his work. And, you know, Bitcoin started out as a design that when it began, it was really a pilot program for a payment system, a global payment system that had potential. It had potential to turn into something pretty wonderful. Mm-hmm. But it didn't. It literally got hijacked. If you look at the who controls Bitcoin, it's a very small group of people. And they were able to limit its liquidity in a way that made it very useful for pumping and dumping. But not, you know, it's very useful for speculation, but it's not useful as a payment system.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very illiquid. And of course, it's still an immature industry. So if you look at the custodial issues, and the fraud issues, you know, it's a very unregulated sort of wild west market. The FBI says 5.6 billion reported losses in crypto reported to them in 2023.
Now, I had a listener, let me just interject and say, I had a listener who said, yeah, it reminds me very much of the NFT stuff, right? You know, when they were selling NFTs and, you know, that was, and that's kind of what I think they did with Bitcoin in a sense. You know, they took something that was designed to be a currency and they started turning it into essentially an NFT.
Well, they've been playing a pump and dump game with it. And there's a lot of serious talent and money behind that pump and dump. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so I read Hijacking Bitcoin and I wrote a review of it. If you just go to Solari, you can get that. And I just did an interview, which we published yesterday, with Steve Patterson, which really helps you understand sort of the evolution. Now, what happened to Roger, he saw the potential. And one of the delightful things about this book is it took me back to when I was at Hamilton Securities and I realized the potential for digital money and creating our own currencies. I got really excited. And we invented a product called Just-in-Time Money. And I remember those days when we just thought, and I tell this story in the book review, Eric Hughes had been was the software developer who hacked ClipperChip, which was Al Gore's, you know, thing to control the internet. And anyway, so Eric came to Hamilton, and Eric and I spent a whole day with literally the whole firm working on inventing just-in-time money. And it was so heady because we saw the potential for what decentralized, you know, crypto or something like a cryptocurrency could be. Anyway, and when you read Roger and Steve's book, you get back that enthusiasm of what is, theoretically possible. Mm-hmm. It's easy after you've watched the pumping and dumping and the tremendous crime around these things that are going on and all the lies and disinformation. It's easy to get jaundiced. And I love the fact that sort of Roger and Steve got me back in that mood of, you know, there's a new world possible. There really is. Anyway,
yeah.
So what happened was this book makes very clear something else. And it's very highly documented, very heavily footnoted. It's a very serious treatment. I am absolutely sure that there is significant counterfeiting of Bitcoin. You know, part of the power of Bitcoin was supposed to be you could only create 21 million. But now what Roger and Steve document the creation, it's called an inflation bug. Mm-hmm. And now there are reports, not just of the one they reported, but of inflation bugs since. I'm absolutely convinced with the inflation bugs they can counterfeit. But now that they're doing the ETFs with BlackRock, you know, I did a deep dive on precious metal ETFs. Let me tell you, the counterfeiting was real.
Oh, yeah.
Collateral fraud, the financial system we have does collateral fraud every time they have a chance. You know, it's kind of like, like not asking a dog to go eat meat. They just do it every time. Anyway, so
even got their company called Securitize because they were securitizing things and creating derivatives. And of course, when you talk about, you know, derivatives of gold and silver, things like paper gold and paper silver, which I didn't really understand. Naively, everybody thinks, well, they've got some gold and they're now going to sell it to you the tenth of the price or whatever. I didn't realize that that was a derivative until you started seeing changes in the price of gold. And you could see that that it didn't track the spot price of gold. It was completely divorced from it. And so that was a key tip. And then when I researched, it's like, oh, now I get it. You know,
this is
another derivative.
Yeah. Here we go. Yeah. So right after, so this book makes very clear that the official story on Bitcoin is not true. Mm-hmm. You know, what you've got is you've got a pump and dump tool. It has no fundamental utilitarian purpose other than it's a pump and dump tool. And of course, with the pump and dump tool, if you have enough backing for it, you can make a fortune, and people have been. So, but also that it's not limited to 21 million Bitcoin. Now, they don't come out and say that in document, but based on what I've read about inflation bugs in their book and since, and what I know about ETFs, the counterfeiting is on. So Bitcoin is basically a speculation, and it's rooted in nothing other than the belief that you can get, you know, 10 more people to come in tomorrow and buy in.
Ponzi scheme.
It's basically a tool of bulb mania.
Yeah.
You know, and it would have some value if it was a successful global payment system, but it's never become that. And it's highly unlikely that it's going to become that. So this thing is only as good as sort of the scam. Now, let's go back. If you look at what's going on in the economy, David, here's what's going on in the economy. We did a tremendous amount of work this year on plunder capitalism and land grabs and the techniques used to do land grabs. Now, we've spent decades now creating more and more debt, more and more debt, more and more debt, more and more paper. The game of musical chairs is over. The music has stopped, and now everybody's racing to grab the real assets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's, now, if you want the real assets, who's got the real assets? Howard Lutkin just gave an interview, is the nominee for Secretary of Commerce and had been in competition for Secretary of Treasury, where he said, don't worry about the debt. You know, the debt's $36 trillion. The U.S. balance sheet has $500 trillion of land and mineral resources. And that's true, okay? And in fact, Trump, in the last Trump administration, the U.S. Geological Survey started doing a survey of all the land and mineral resources of North America, including what the government owns. So, and if you look at the state governments, I mean, the federal government owns a lot, and the states own a lot too. So the you know, so if you're sitting here and you've run up the Bitcoin market, you have a small number of people have a tremendous amount of Bitcoin, they can't possibly get out at the current situation. You know, they can't get their money out without crashing the market.
Right.
Now,
right.
What do they want? They want real assets. So what you want to do is you want to swap your Bitcoin for land, for real estate, for precious metals, for real businesses. You want real assets. So how do you get out of your Bitcoin and get into the real assets? Well, it's real simple. You get the government to buy your Bitcoin and you get the government to sell its land, right? Pretty simple. So you want them to get, they have the real and you have the unreal. So you flip them the unreal and you get the real. So what's being proposed? What's being proposed is the government announce long-term buying programs to buy Bitcoin. So the federal government buy Bitcoin, the states buy Bitcoin. If you announce a long-term buying program in a highly illiquid market, you're going to send the price to the moon, and all the guys who started and built this speculation can sell into that. Okay, and not only can they sell their 21 million Bitcoin, they can sell more than their 21 million Bitcoin, right? Right, because there's counterfeit. Okay,
you got to be careful that you're not their exit strategy, right? When they get into this,
and where's the government going to get that money? All the people who don't want to go into the marketplace and want to buy Bitcoin. The government is going to sell bonds to their retirement funds. The money's going to come out of their retirement funds and go into Bitcoin, you know, held in the treasury, the state or federal government treasury. So you're going to take from the poor and give to the rich, or you're going to take from the middle class and give to the rich.
And now
if the oil industry said, we want the government to start long-term buying of our oil, or the agriculture industry said, we want long-term buying of our agriculture, or the pharmaceutical said, we want the government long-term buying of our pharmaceuticals, we would all know what that's about, right?
Yeah.
But for some reason, when the Bitcoin enthusiasts say, the vast majority of people don't want to buy our Bitcoin, so we want to have government mandate to make them buy our Bitcoin with their retirement savings. That's about as ugly as it gets. And it's very ugly because if you look at how much money those guys poured into donations, and they're basically saying we can bribe the politicians and get them to use your retirement savings to buy Bitcoin because you won't. You won't buy it. So we're going to make you buy it.
H.L. Mencken said an election is an advanced auction of stolen goods. I quote that all the time. And that is really what we're looking at here, isn't it?
So, but let's look at a chart. If you, I want you go back to the going direct reset, which was which was reviewed by the central bankers in August of 2019. If we do a chart of the U.S. stock market, what we see is the U.S. stock market is up, you know, over 100% since that date. And the Treasury, if we take the 20-year Treasury ETF, it's down by 35%. So what's the game? The game is the government, Treasury, sells Treasury bonds to our retirement funds and our IRAs and 401ks and retirement funds around the world. And then it takes that money and it spends that money. It gives that money to Elon Musk to do SpaceX. Or it gives that money, you know, the Chinese are subsidizing Tesla. Or it gives that money to, you know, to invest in tremendous amounts of AI that... Or the CHIP Act, tremendous money to drive, you know, Taiwan Semiconductor. So all the guys who are getting that money out of our retirement fund are getting huge up in their companies, while we're going down 35% financing the game. Now, if you think it's bad in the stock market, because all that stuff for the most part is real. You may disagree with how it's priced or how it's organized, but it's real railroads. You know, real satellites flying around, real chips being put into computers, you know, and so, you know, you're still financing something that has to do with the integration of technology and productive activities. If you take this and buy those guys out of their scam, and they're free to turn around and buy the land and other real estate. So if you look at some of the trial balloons, RFK at Bitcoin 2024 proposed that the sales of Bitcoin should be tax-free and secret. So the Treasury is buying it, but they're not saying who they're buying it from.
Wow.
Right, it's secret. And the people who are selling it don't have to pay taxes if they roll it into real estate.
How do you justify making it secret? What did he say to justify that? I'd not seen that before, but yeah, why would you justify that?
I finally wrote a commentary up, and I said, this is so outrageous, I'm not going to even send it to him. I'm just going to write it and publish it. Mm-hmm. But I sent it to him and his advisors and said, you know what, how do you justify, this is a take from the poor and give to the rich scheme.
Yeah.
The worst take from the poor and give to the rich scheme I've ever seen. And what are you leaving the governments with? Instead of having $500 trillion, you know, of land and mineral resources, they end up with a bunch of Bitcoin. What are they going to do with that? It's worthless. It's going to be worthless.
Wow. Yeah, one of the things that bothers me about all this stuff, too, of course, is tokenization. And, you know, you're talking about the Bitcoin swap out for real assets and land and things like that. And I call Howard Lutnick, I call him Lucky Lutnick. And he got real lucky on 9/11, you know. But, you know, he's all about tokenization. He's like the tokenization king. And I'm very concerned about, you know, it's great if you get, I think the government under Biden was coming directly at him, going to just prohibit it in their face. I'm concerned about what is happening with the Trump administration, as you're pointing out, you know, this one aspect of it here, which is very key, which is a switching out of assets. But it's also the privacy. And I know you're about financial privacy and the importance of cash and things like that. All this fascination with blockchain exposes all of that. And so that's another aspect of it.
Well, it sets up a two-tier system where everything we do is public and everything, you know, there's a second system that's totally private.
Yes, yes.
Right.
And increasingly, that way with government all the time. And they've just, as part of this continuing resolution thing, as the listener pointed out, they've got a clause in there to hide data that is being passed around within various committees and things like that within the House. So, again, they're always trying to hide what they do and have more information about what you're doing.
So let's look at a couple of key strategic points. So the first thing they need, if they're going to get financial control, is they need a digital ID. Mm-hmm. And Trump has been promoting a digital ID, and the conservatives and Trump together, you know, they use immigration and election fraud as an excuse for digital. We do not need a digital ID system. We had honest elections and we had tight borders before digital technology existed.
That's right.
So I don't want to hear, you know, that's a bunch of hooey. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but they're using that as an excuse. And I just saw one of the business newsletters I get said that Congress will start off by addressing election fraud and immigration right off the bat. And my fear is that's an excuse to do a digital ID. Now, you have the states pushing the real ID. They've been trying to push the real ID ever since 9/11, but it's been going slow at the states, and we need to do everything we can. You know, if I was a state legislator, I'd just get the real ID thrown out of the DMV, and we need to do that.
And now TSA is going to be pretty much demanding that, they said, this next year. We'll see what happens with that.
If you have a passport, they can't demand a real ID. You have a passport.
Mm-hmm. But they're also setting up their biometric thing, and that's one of the things when Trump is talking about digital ID. Yeah, air, land, and sea, and it's going to be biometric. I mean, it's very, very concerning. We saw DeSantis in Florida and the rest of them saying we got to have mandatory e-verify because of immigration and illegals taking people's jobs.
It's not true.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely not true. So the first thing is you got to stop a digital ID. The second thing you got to stop is an all-digital monetary system. Because if you have a digital ID and an all-digital monetary system, then we're saying, okay, you know, then we can control where you go, what you buy, and we know everything there is to know about you. It's a complete surveillance system. And if you don't behave, we can turn off your money, or we can limit your money in a whole variety of ways, and we can institute taxation without representation. Mm-hmm. Then the third thing we need to stop is what we want is we want the people's representatives to control and operate fiscal policy. We don't want the central bankers controlling fiscal policy in addition to monetary policy.
Mm-hmm.
The rise of the deep state correlates almost perfectly with the rise of private corporations and banks doing government operations.
Yeah.
Okay? The idea that somehow Doge is going to go in there, fire all the civil servants, and put in big tech contractors and things are going to get better? No, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
If you finish getting rid of the civil service, you will end up with the central banks and intelligence agencies controlling and running everything, because that's who the corporations and the defense contractors and the big tech companies are going to report to. They're not going to report to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Congress is, you know, that's game over. So those are the three.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point about Doge. Yeah, that's very important.
Right. So those are the three things. You want to preserve the legislature's controlling fiscal policy. You want to stop an all digital monetary system, and you don't want to let a digital ID take effect. Because if you get those three things, boom, 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 then we're talking about living in a digital concentration camp in a slavery system.
Yeah, that's absolutely
it's
right.
It's that simple.
And they came out and said, you know, before the election, a few months before the election, we're not going to do CBDC, the Five Eyes states, countries.
You can do it with credit cards and crypto.
Yeah, they can do it with these pieces.
Right.
And a lot of that is already in place with MasterCard.
What you want to stop is an all-digital monetary system.
Yes. Yes.
An all digital monetary system. And it's not, you know, it's not, forget CBDC versus, forget all these different products in the digital realm, mm-hmm. you know, all of which could be wonderful or terrible, depending on how you do them.
Yeah.
So technology in a way is agnostic. It's how we use it.
Right.
So all these things could be wonderful or they could be terrible. What we cannot afford is an all digital system, because it will be controlled by the people who control the hardware.
That's right. Yeah.
You know,
I'm seeing a lot of states got on board. A couple of years ago, they were talking about it very heavily, CBDC. And so you've got a lot of different states that are putting out stuff still to say, we're not going to have CBDC. They just rename it and it morphs into something completely. You know, they just spin it a little bit and you still get. But the essence that you're talking about there is a digital ID and the fact that we have digital cash. That's what they need to be focused on. The CBDC, they realize because they watch conversations on social media, they realize that we're onto that game. So they spin that game in a different way and come around in a different angle.
So I want everybody to go to Solari, and we have a big new memo that we published. It's up on PDF. You can download it. You can forward it. You can link to it. It's called What the States Can Do, Building a Legal and Financial Infrastructure for Financial Freedom. And it goes through is a very serious look at all the different areas that a governor or state legislature can implement to protect financial freedom within their jurisdiction, so that no matter what the guys in Basel, Switzerland, or what the guys in Washington or Wall Street do, you can have financial freedom within your state.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of the states, as you know, is they, under the Constitution, the powers not delegated to the federal government are reserved to the states. The states have the power to protect our financial freedom in a way that protects our governmental and individual sovereignty. And that was, the Solari team's been working night and day for 2 years to figure out, working with different legislators and state leaders, how to do this. And that information is up. I encourage you to download, read it, send it to all the legislators. There's so many great things that can be done. And for everything we cover, David, we give you links and citations to the states that have either done it or proposed it, so you can find your counterparties around the country who are working on this, because there's a lot of good coordination between the treasurers, the AGs, and the different state legislators. You know, we're now all, you know, it's almost like by 2022, we figured, okay, we got to do this.
Yeah.
You know, we're on our own. We got to do this.
That's right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's
that is important, and that's a big, I mean, there's things that we can do as individuals, and I'll ask you about that in a second, but it's very important that we fight them at that level as well. You have information besides the people who are on that board, you know, information on a state-by-state level as to people who are open to this type of thing as well?
Yeah, so get in the game.
Yeah.
We found that a fair amount of our subscribers were reticent to contact or communicate. They didn't know their state senator. They didn't know their state representative.
Mm-hmm.
We kept saying, hey, listen, those are the most important elections this year, so get involved. But right beneath What the States Can Do, the PDF, we have another PDF called Working with Your State Legislators that's a guide to if you feel, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get to know them. I don't know, you know. That's a guide for you to get to know, help you get to know your state legislators and know sort of how to get into the process and how to get yourself acclimated. So that's there as a resource too. I also want to mention we've announced we're going to take one of the briefings I do and ask Catherine and the Solari team and do a briefing in the second Thursday of every month. We're reserving that time to brief state legislators, and the first briefing is on January 9th on Thursday. It's for state legislators, state officials, and their staff, and state bankers if they want to invite the state bankers with them, and of course the subscriber who arranges it is invited as well. And that's the first one on January 9th is going to be on the Bitcoin reserve scam. And we have a lot of state legislators who are receiving, they're getting AstroTurf emails. And so they need to understand, what is this? How does it work? Is it a good idea? Is it not a good idea? If it's not a good idea, why? And how do I explain it to my constituents who think it is a good idea?
And that's so, key because, you know, January 9th, you're going to do that. January the 21st, when Trump, because he says, first day, we're going to do a Bitcoin reserve, very first day. So it's important for people to understand what that is before that.
So he doesn't have the legal authority to do a Bitcoin reserve. What he can do is the marshals, Department of Justice has seized 200,000 Bitcoins or 210,000 Bitcoins. And I'm assuming they're holding those in the asset forfeiture fund. He, in theory, could say, I'm moving them to Treasury. I'm not sure how he does that without an appropriation. But he certainly has those 210,000. He can say, I'm not going to sell them. And that's a Bitcoin reserve. And he said at Bitcoin 2024 that he would do that. And I think he has the power to do that. If you look at the idea of moving it to Treasury and moving in accounts without Congress's approval, I mean, if I was Congress, I would nail him on that, number one. But number two, the idea Kennedy proposed by executive order that he would free them from the capital gains tax, which... You know, that is unconstitutional for a president by executive order to make a radical change in American tax law without Congress. Without a comment period from the public. I mean, that's, you know, hello, Stalin.
I know. Well, I mean, look, just because it's not legal or constitutional doesn't stop these guys. I mean, look what Trump did with, well, we can take the gun and do the due process later. I can do gun control by executive order. And they established that as a precedent, you know, immediately.
Well, there seems to be, you know, and this is what happens when you get these kind of financial pumps. You know, because I've lived through so many pump and dumps. It's unbelievable. And of course, when you're in the pump, everybody thinks they're the master of the universe and a genius, and then the dump over and, you know. But in the pump, you know, there's no, everybody feels so great, and there's so much entrainment and subliminal programming. It's a religion.
Yes.
And you know, you've seen it before. And suddenly, oh, the Constitution, that's not important. The laws, that are not important. Financial practices, you know, good financial practices and rules. No, we don't have to do that. It's young, it's innovative, it's creative, it's the future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, as long as.
And they're saying all that about the tokenization stuff. Oh, this is going to be so wonderful. You know, we're going to.
Well, here's what the tokenization stuff. The WEF says it's 2030 and you have no assets. If you create a token for everything, and then start to trade it, it's a great way to take everybody's assets.
That's right.
I mean, it's just a taking system.
Well, just look at what they did with the securitization, which is essentially tokenization as well, with the mortgages. You know, you got something that's a real tangible asset, and look at the destruction that they did with that in 2007.
Well, but here's the thing, and I know this because I was Assistant Secretary of Housing. We had houses. I had one house in Chicago I found that had refinanced and defaulted five times in a year. Now, that is the pattern you have when you have 10 mortgages on one house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And you mix it all together so nobody can see any of that stuff as well.
Well, right? But the reason, go back to Hamilton Securities, the reason they seized our office and stole our software and would never give it back is, you know, our databases were going to show that there were a lot more mortgages than there were homes in America. You know, the mortgage fraud was off the charts. So here's the thing. I think... You know, I wrote during the election, I wrote a paper called Solari Paper Number One. It's up at our Missing Money website. And it's a review of the federal credit. And it shows you all the things that are wrong with the federal credit. David, we have run the federal credit that I know of since 1996, and we have refused to obey the financial management laws. We have run the government significantly outside of the financial management laws in a way I would describe as criminal. Mm-hmm. And we know that there's $21 trillion that we've identified missing, and we know they announced under the last Trump administration to take the books dark. Now, if you're serious about reform, the first thing you do is you say, I'm going to bring the government back into compliance with the financial management laws. That's number one. Number two, I'm going to find out where all the $21 trillion went, and I'm going to get it back, or I'm going to get the related assets back, and I'm going to hold liable and responsible the people who stole it,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to reverse the financial coup. And then the third thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take a look at all of our assets, and, you know, whether it's our people or our land, and I'm going to say, how do we get back to being productive? Step one is we got to stop poisoning our kids.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Right.
So, you know, if our people aren't, you know, aren't our talent, then that's what's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right,
right there
not,
at FDA. So what do you think? Because I think of FDA now, I talk about it as being free to do anything. for, you know, and so, but at the center of that is the poisoning, the food and the drugs. What do you think RFK Jr. would do, assuming that he gets through confirmation? I think if they get a sense that he's serious about anything, they'll find some way to not confirm.
I think he's going to be confirmed, and I'll tell you why I think he's going to be confirmed. The system on this issue has lost its credibility, and if it doesn't reaffirm its credibility, it's going to lose the channel.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what you see, there's always, you steal, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have a period of reform, and everybody says, see, we can trust the government, and then you steal again, and then you reform. You know, it's like a pendulum, and you swing it back and forth. It's like a harvesting machine.
And, of course, it was important for Trump to try to recoup some of that lost trust after he was bragging about his vaccine, to put the guy that was a vaccine skeptic in there, you know. And I looked at it, and I always thought, is that going to go beyond the election? You know, will he actually put him in there? And if he does put him in there, will he do anything?
So it's funny, I will tell you, I don't know if you saw the interview he did with Meet the Press, mm-hmm. where they were giving him a hard time about vaccines, mm-hmm. and he looked at the woman, it was like she was like an economic hit lady, he looked at the person doing the interview and he said, you know, I'm going to forget his exact words, but he said, you know, we have a real problem, and we have to do something about it, you can't. And she said, well, you're going to can't. He said, I want to just get to the truth. He said, but we used to have, you know, one in every 100,000 was autistic. Now it's one in every 100. My numbers say it's one in every, there's differences in the people I know between 20 and 30.
Yeah.
But
that's what
whatever the number is, what he was saying is you have no future as a civilization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have no future. You can't let that go. You have to get to the bottom of it, and you have to fix it. And she couldn't have cared less.
No.
And you
put out all the talking points. Well, we're just better at measuring this stuff now. It's not really that we got more, you know, all that kind of nonsense that we've heard for a while from these people. That
no, but you know
up.
Something? You can murder with a pen. You can kill people with a pen.
Yeah.
And what she is doing, you know, you never want to make the Attorney General of the United States because there are a lot of people who are going to get prosecuted. Yeah, but that's murder.
Yeah,
that's murder.
It is.
That is really murder, and that's wrong. I mean, it just, you know, some people should go to hell.
Yeah, that's why I could never support Trump because of what happened with the vaccine and the fact that he continued to cheer it, you know, and to push this other stuff. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, when we talk about pump and dump, one of the things that immediately comes to mind over this last year is artificial intelligence and the things that are there. Is that going to be a big bubble that's going to burst the stock market? Because I've never seen a pump and dump like AI ever. And all the amazing things that it's going to do. And, of course, it will have some useful purposes. But we already saw the dot-com bust. You know, the internet was going to be a big deal.
Let me make some guesses here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reason you're seeing the AI stocks fly is because government's shoveling so much money at them figuring it out. Because you need AI to build the control grid. And
absolutely.
And You know, one of the things, the feedback you get from businesses is that businesses can't figure out a way to use this stuff to make them profitable. Mm-hmm. So they're struggling to turn it into real productivity, which is, you know, and in part, that's on any new technology, that's always the truth. But I think one of the reasons the stocks are flying is the government is throwing so much money at it because they need it for the control grid, not because it creates fundamental economics.
Did you see Mark Andreessen talking about why he flipped to Trump? He said, first of all, they told him, the guy that created Netscape, they tell him, don't even bother getting into AI. We're going to control that. And we're going to shut this down. He goes, why? You can't do that. That's pretty outrageous, and you can't do that. Well, we did it before. You know, we put entire fields of physics off limits to other people, they told him. And he said, well, I learned a couple of things there. He was really taken back by the frankness of the Biden administration. That's just kind of people they are. They're so incredibly
Well, that
arrogant.
Is frank, but if you look at the deep state, they are going to control it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that you know, these guys, the goal of the AI is to help them do the, you know, their version of the new governance system.
Oh, I agree.
And it's back to the control grid. Yeah. And I, you know, one of my big questions, we do a section every, you know, we do a wrap up every quarter and every year. And we have a whole section called Unanswered Questions. And because there's so many, you know, there's so many mysteries in the world we live in. David, but one of my unanswered questions is the reason these guys want total, complete control is so they can bring out free energy, because they're terrified of bringing it out. You know, free energy can be weaponized. It can be very dangerous. Mm-hmm. So do they want total control so they can finally bring out free energy? I don't know.
How would they weaponize free energy?
So I don't understand the physics. You'd have to talk to the guys who really, you know, who do it. I have one member, two members of our team were the guys who did the Breakthrough Energy conferences. If you go to Global BEM, and they dragged me along to a couple of them. But that, you know, that technology can literally create weapons that can do huge destruction.
True. True. And of course, it's a big part of their control grid. You know, when you look at their ability to control things, it comes back to not only their monopoly, essentially, on money and financial assets, but it's also a connection to energy, the ability to manufacture things. But in the past, they've even talked about how, well, you know, we just need to kind of switch over away from these fiat currencies and start trading in energy credits. And so you see things like carbon taxes, and you see this carbon sequestration, which is another scam that I see developing there in the background with Trump and these people around him. I mean, that's going to be they're going to come out and tell people you can buy it. You can use any kind of energy you want, but you just got to pay us, right?
We don't have a fiat currency problem. I mean, the currency that we have the problem with is it's debt-based. Mm-hmm. But we could easily evolve a dollar system into something without debt-basing that could be great. The greatest currencies throughout history have been fiat currencies that had good governance systems. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you have a powerful fiat currency that is basically run by a secret governance system who wants you dead, you know, that's a problem. but you know, there's a difference between the problem being a currency problem and an organized crime problem or a secret. Our problem is we have a secret governance system. We don't have a financial problem. We have a political problem. Mm-hmm. We have a secret governance system, and it's trying to centralize and control in a way that we don't want. We want to be free.
I agree.
That's our problem.
I agree.
And it's just not a financial problem.
We've got about 5 minutes left, and I want to ask you in a little bit of time that we've got, what's your take on all this drone stuff? Certainly looks like a setup to me, and of course, they've got a reauthorization thing that's going to be folded into the continuing resolution. They could have gotten that passed by putting in a continuing resolution, but it's looking more and more to me like perhaps they, as they start putting out this narrative about radiation, I get concerned about a false flag, dirty bomb or something to escalate war. What do you think is going on with it?
So this is a wild guess, but my guess is one of two things are going on. One is they have those drones out. You know, it's clearly a military intelligence operation. Mm-hmm. So it's either the military and the intelligence agencies, or it's their contractors mm-hmm. doing it for them. Mm-hmm. So they're either concerned and looking for something. You know, so they, you know, they have a real concern about some kind of risk.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing the surveillance to figure out what's going on. And, you know, it's a legitimate national security concern, whatever that is. We can speculate about that. Or the second thing is, if you look at how much money they've put in the defense authorizations to build drone capacity and where those people are, you know, it's a lot of this is happening in those corridors. And this could be sort of prototyping to get people ready for the control grid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so they're planning on using a lot of drones to run the control grid.
Yes. Yeah.
So it could just be prototyping and getting folks used to this kind of invasive drone.
Wow. What do you think of the idea that, you know, they're kind of planning this out there about it being radiation? What about a false flag, dirty bomb, so they could escalate some of these wars? What do you think about
well,
that?
Well, I think they're really concerned about, you know, on the number one scenario, they're doing surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could be really concerned about dirty bombs or, you know, whether it's a false flag or a terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we're in a world of asymmetrical warfare.
Yeah.
Okay. If you are basically engineering the death of Russian generals in Moscow,
yeah,
then they feel free to come and do the same here.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, that's and the Russians have warned, if you keep doing this, you know, if you invade our sovereign territory and kill our military on our soil, whether it's a missile or, you know, an assassination like this, you know, two can play this game.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
So we're in a world of asymmetrical warfare. Anything's possible. I've had more than a few people over the years tell me, you know, if so-and-so doesn't get his way, he's going to set off a dirty bomb in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember I had one member of the intelligence agency who tried to persuade me that when they thought they couldn't get Iran-Contra to really, you know, keep the lid on it, that they were prepared to blow up a small, you know, a suitcase nuke in Chicago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now, you go back and you look at Operation Northwood. So, I mean, they were willing to do 9/11 type stuff, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, I guess. Yeah.
Right. So I think those drones reflected military intelligence concern that, you know, there was risk and they had to find it.
Mm. Yeah, it is very concerning. You know, when I first looked at it, I thought, well, maybe this authorization thing. But the more I look at it, the more I think,
well
they're going to get that through
anyway.
Here's
the thing,
David. They've already got
it. Very quickly, you know, the situation has moved to a real out-of-control state.
Yeah.
And there are far too many very powerful people who think chaos is good for business.
That's right. That's right. Oh, yeah.
So
they make money going up and coming down, especially if they know when it's going to go up and come down. That's the key thing for them, isn't it?
Well, but part of it is the hubris. If you look at what has been gotten away with, the organized crime hubris is bad, and you have many factions.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we're in for, there's going to be plenty of chaos in 2025. And it's not all just going to be engineered. It's when a society loses its bearings, you get real madness.
Mm-hmm.
And we're dealing more and more with people who are literally losing their mind.
Oh, I agree. Well, let's talk a little bit about Solari and the Solari report. I've got a copy of the one on water.
Oh, you got our latest wrap-up. Great.
Yeah, it's amazing the breadth of information that you get in these reports. And, of course, you're always ahead of the curve there at Solari.com. Tell people a little bit about the membership that's there.
So we have a subscription service. We'd love to have you as a subscriber. As David pointed out, every quarter we publish, we do a big wrap-up of the news trends and stories. We do a big wrap-up of the equity markets and the financial markets, but we also deep dive what I call a primary theme. And I'm a great believer coming out of the investment community that at any given time there are 20 to 25 primary trends that are driving our world, like the growth in space or the shift of economic activity to Asia. These are long-lived trends, or the bull market in gold.
Mm-hmm.
These are long-lived trends. If you take the time to understand them, learn about them, you know, you get that knowledge and then it's good, you know, it's good for 20 years because it's a long live trend.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at the one we just did on water, and everybody said to me, water, why is the Salieri report, you know, your lane is money, why are you doing water? I said, the number one most important thing to the financial value of a place in real estate is good water. If a community has good water, remember that town in California where they stopped the water system? They said, we can't afford to do it anymore. And suddenly these $500,000 houses were worth nothing.
That's right.
There was no water system.
That's right.
You know, imagine. So anyway, but water is very, very important to the health and well-being of a place. And one of the things I always say to families, if you're going to reverse your situation in the great poisoning, if you want to, you know, get out of the great poisoning and get really healthy, the first thing you have to pay attention to is, you know, what is the water you're drinking? What is the water you're bathing in? What's the water you're putting on the, you know, on your garden, on your food?
Yes.
So
yes.
Anyway, so this the last one was on water. The next one coming out will include all the material on what the states can do. But we also did a deep dive on land grab. What are the tactics used to do land grab? And anyway, there's a wealth of information that can help you at the state level really deal with the fact that there's a whole group of people trying to grab our land and in the meantime stick, you know, Ponzi schemes into our pension funds.
Well, they told us that we're going to own nothing. We just have to figure out how that attack is going to come and how we defend against it. And that's what the
intelligence is. So here's Larry's vision. It's 2030. Mm-hmm. You have more assets and are more prosperous than you are today. And Klaus Schwab is in his chateau in the Alps in a state of deep depression.
That would be great. I like that vision.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Catherine. It's always great to have you on, Solari. And Solari Report is solari.com, and you can find Solari Report. And I would underscore for everybody, I'm definitely going to take a look at your article there about hijacking Bitcoin in your interview. I'm very interested to see that because it is going to be a big part of the next year that's coming up.
This guy, Steve Patterson, he is brilliant. So is Roger Ver. You're really going to enjoy listening to him. I'm going to try and get him back again because these are both, you know, I never explained what happened to Roger, but after he published the book, the feds went after him.
Oh, yeah.
And I think given the scams, the last thing they want is the truth about Bitcoin. And there's no, if you look at Roger's qualifications and the book speaks for itself because if you look at the research, the footnoting, the material, it's impeccable.
Yeah, that's amazing. Anyway. Let me just ask you real quickly before the show ends, and we've gone over a little bit here a couple of minutes, but I got you on. I got to have you on more often because it's always fascinating to have you on. What do you think about gold? You're talking about long-term trends of this.
We're in a long-term bull market we're in a long-term bull market for gold.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. And I don't see anything fundamentally changing either, do you?
No, I don't think there's anything new, anything changing, other than there's a major marketing push to get everybody to not buy gold, to buy Bitcoin and crypto. But it's working, you know, it's pulled. Imagine if it hadn't been for Bitcoin and crypto, gold would be through the moon. So it's been very successful, and the central bankers are free to buy and buy and buy.
That's right. Absolutely is. Well, thank you so much, Catherine. Always great to have you. Solari.com, fascinating information, great insights. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And let me just get to a couple of these comments here as we play the music rolling us out here. We got Guard Goldsmith said, what she says is so true. I recall Reason reported men tend to look at large systems in politics, federalism, et cetera, while women tend to stay more local on school kids and politics and so forth. And yeah, again, Guard Goldsmith, Liberty Conspiracy, every night and on Rockfin and on Twitter. Andromeda One, thank you very much for the tip. It says Ketanji Brown Jackson identifies as a woman, yet she can't explain what a woman is because she's not a biologist. We're living in the Twilight Zone. Merry Christmas. Thank you all.